have a timeout. Decide not to use it. Curry, way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry! With 0.6 seconds remaining.
The brilliant shot. Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup.
For us.
He scores! Australia have got it!
That could describe this podcast, though, Doc.
Well, I'm sure this is making Alan Border happy, standing out in the middle of the ground having a fucking yarn.
Has Alan Border ever had the runs? Because, like, I've had the runs, and I don't think anyone wants you out in the middle of a large cricket field if you've got the
clothing. Not after you've been in India, after you've had the runs for a couple of days. Because at that stage, you don't have the... let me just be a fucking doctor here for a second. You don't have the muscle tension to clamp down on that motherfucker. You've lost a lot of electrolytes. You don't have the fine muscle control to clamp down on that motherfucker before it starts hosing down your back door. And that's not something you want in a sport where you have to wear whites. I mean, this is where the New Zealand one day team of the 80s was ahead of the curve. That beige wasn't for, you know, that would have been perfect for touring India with. Oh, fuck. He's not in a good way. He's fetal, basically. He's really in average knock. And the shame is that he's had a real good test match.
Yeah.
He's 13, but that's 50.
He's employed the Matty Hayden theory of batting in India, which is, you know, use my height to stifle a spin. I'm a bit disappointed by all these wickets falling, though, because I was hoping for India to be 2 for 400 and something, and I was going to make a nice little joke between flat pitches and flat earth. So
this has ruined your content, has it? This has ruined your comedy! Headship, Dumb Dumb Club.
Oh, dear.
This is the Bulls podcast, folks.
Yeah, Kyrie Irving, man. I guess, you know, I shouldn't laugh. He's getting paid a truckload of money, and, you know, I'm not. So he can.
This is what happens when you only
whatever you like.
You only go to university for sport, and then you only turn up for a year. I have a theory about this.
He was injured for most of that year. He should have turned up to some classes.
True. He should have. You know, he was obviously was on the internet reading about something, but
not science.
And you know, the annoying thing that the universe hates us because I mean that this story broke like hours after we finished recording our last episode. The idea that Kyrie Irving did a podcast with a couple of his teammates where they dug into his incredible array of bizarre shit that he believes, which is basically a rogues gallery of every bullshit conspiracy you've ever heard of, from basically, but headlined by the fact that he thinks the Earth is flat. Obviously, the moon landing was faked because the Earth is flat.
Mm. But aliens, but aliens exist.
Yeah, this is the bit I don't quite get. I mean, the Earth is flat. The moon landing was fake. Planets don't exist. But there's aliens. What are the aliens? Like a mobile, in a kid's cot? Do they sort of hang down from the ceiling? I mean, how does that work? How does any of this fucking work? But when you think about it, his game's completely two-dimensional, so it's not surprising that his belief in the world is also two-dimensional. But if you are... The most charitable way that you can think of Kyrie's belief in this sort of stuff is that the way he plays the game, it takes a certain self-belief to play the game when you're 5 for 25 going into the third quarter, and suddenly you put the team on your back and you score 20 points and you win the game. You take that final shot. It takes a self-belief verging on, some might say, delusion. I think that if you took away Kyrie's ability to believe in completely delusional bullshit, it would be like cutting Samson's hair. It would be the end of him. Mm. He has to believe in bullshit in order for him to believe in the greatest bullshit of all, which is his ability to win games.
I am the
because
best.
Because analytically, he is a bucket of shit and needs to fucking try a bit harder.
I am the best player in every fourth quarter of every game.
That is the conspiracy theory to end them all. I mean, of course, his conspiracy theories could themselves be a conspiracy theory. But that would make your head explode.
I was driving home and streaming the cricket, but I had the like the NBA scores just on a refresh thing, and I was like, oh, the clips are, because Reddick was on Simmons' podcast the other day, and Simmons trying to lob him a few you know nice easy balls, saying, you know, you guys try against the Warriors, you know, you guys had a good series against them 4 years ago. And he just absolutely went to town on his own team. Like, not in a headline sort of way. Just like, no, we've been pretty owned by Golden State for quite a while.
Well, they got closer today because they got midway through the... They got most of the way through the third quarter before they just fell over completely. Well, they were leading at half time and they were at parity.
I think they
in the third quarter.
I think they won the game by 15 points in the first, second, and fourth quarter. And then Curry just went.
Yes.
Curry just decided that, you know, he'd had enough of this shit.
There was a 50-point quarter, and it wasn't the All-Star game.
Yep.
So that was a thing. They haven't figured out how to guard Curry. But that's not... that's.
Well, he was. I saw some highlights. I haven't seen the game yet, but I saw some of the highlights.
I watched probably this... about 4 minutes left in the second half was when I got home, so I had it on when I was watching stuff.
When he gets in one of those moods, it's not like you're not guarding him properly. He's just unguardable. Like, he was hitting those three-point shots. That last one he hit
at the end of the three-quarter.
Like,
yeah, what? But he's not doing that against every club. I mean, who's the guard who can guard on the Clippers without Chris Paul out there?
Yeah, but they do that to the Clippers when Chris Paul's there too. There's just something about the Clippers that seems to
I don't think he does it on Chris Paul.
Because remember that there was the first game they played or the second game they played after they lost that final series to them that year was the one where Curry broke Paul's ankles and stepped back and hit a big three that put them up a big way in the game.
Yeah, that's one shot. Yeah, I think they'd be doing better. I mean, Chris Paul's not too far away. I mean, the Clippers are back to they're fourth, but they've got the same record as the Jazz.
Yeah.
So I mean that inevitably that I think they'll probably be the 4-5. Although the Grizz are still
zombie grizzling.
So, well, they're not really zombies anymore. No. They've got most of their bits back, which means they're probably not going to play as well.
I did like the little bit of play in the All-Star game, which was they ran elevated doors for for Marc Gasol. They ran a play that they normally run for Steph Curry and Klay Thompson for this huge 6'10 dude to hit a three-pointer from the top
big
of the
bucket
game.
Of paella. They ran it for him. Yeah, the All-Star game was the usual trash fire.
Oh, it was. It's getting contest. Worse. It's terrible.
Yeah. I tell you what, the scene was set in the Rising Stars game, which was just there was more uncontested threes in that than the three-point contest, and the dunk contest was bad, but it was back to being bad like.
It was
before.
2 years ago. Yeah.
Last year. I mean, last year was tremendous. And I think that's kind of... it really depends what your candidates are. It was interesting that Aaron Gordon was the big name and he fucked it completely.
Looking at some of the dunks in-game, like I know that they were about as contested as the dunk contest, but what I reckon would make the dunk contest good is a bit of white man can't jump, two-on-two comp. So, you know, you play a two-on-two.
So there's actually somebody that's contesting. Well, yeah. Who's going to line up to contest a dunk?
Yeah, see, this is the problem with most of All-Star Weekend.
No one wants to get themselves hurt. No one's playing defense.
Other than the skills challenge and the three-point comp is absolutely, like, it's too close to the end of the, too close to finals. And I don't.
But as we said, the point of All-Star game is to get picked for it.
Yeah, that's
actually playing it.
But I actually think that the game itself, like the actual product on television, is getting so bad that it might actually be damaging the NBA. Because
it's just not being watched.
Yeah.
Not being watched isn't the worst crime in the world. It's not being watched on TNT. Who cares? It's just a break. Everyone gets back to it. We had a couple of really good games this afternoon. Mm. Back into it.
Turns out Lou Williams was pretty happy to be traded to the Rockets, yeah?
Lou Williams was traded. So, a quick rundown of some of them their trades that happened. Because the trade deadline, it was the week after, All-Star break. And the trade deadline was about 9 a.m. this morning, New Zealand time, which is about 6 a.m. Bezo time, as we currently see it. Lou Williams got traded from the Lakers to the Rockets for some bits and pieces. That was the first move of the new Lakers front office after Jeannie Buss finally relieved her brother of his duties and put at Mitch Kupchak. So brother got the arse and Cup got washed. And Magic Johnson, who's a little-known basketball executive, played a rookie executive,
you'd say.
Probably known more for his baseball. He owns the LA baseball team, so that's probably more what people know him for. But he's become the Jim Buss, the director of the president of baseball operations, and there's a new GM underneath that, which is Kobe's agent. Is also Dante Exum's agent and James Harden's agent and Dion Waiters' agent, I think. He's very well plugged into that, but he's never been a GM before, I think, is the point I was trying to make.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a trend, though, now. I think that's the fourth major sports agent that's gone to be a GM in basketball.
I think that... I don't know whether it's a trend based on that or whether it's a trend based on the personalities of the people.
Yeah, I was going to say, like...
Arne Tellem wasn't... who was the super agent who went to join Detroit. That was primarily not about roster or anything like that. It was about...
It was about building a
fucking venue. Yeah, he's doing more
business stuff than player stuff, from what I understand, which is a little bit weird considering he's an agent. But I think you're right. Like, the professional requirements for being one of those top agents is also probably the professional requirements for being a general manager. Like, the character and the work traits and everything like that would mesh quite nicely. Everyone's ragging on the Lakers.
Everyone was ragging on them so much that I was thinking we were going to have to revisit our dysfunctional power ranking. The Lakers, the Knicks, and the Kings. But I think the Lakers. This isn't as bad a move as
this is
the ragged indicator.
This is little league stuff compared to Sacramento and New York. But I do love
Sacramento had a really good win today against the Nuggets, against their rivals for the. I think they're going to chase the fucking eight anyway.
The funny thing is they've got a coach that. Like, his reputation is built on making players play hard, you know, getting more out of themselves. A little bit like, not in terms of technical stuff, but like Tibbs is a guy that's known for getting more out of his players than anyone else. And I think Dave Yeager's a bit like that. Well, having a guy that ambles up and down the floor and sulks and sooks is not real good. But having a second year player like Willie Cauley-Stein that evidently busts his ass all day, every day in the gym and just wants to play hard, probably a good fit for that coach.
And Cauley-Stein scored a shitload of points. He got almost 30 and 10 today. Cauley-Stein was a lottery pick. He was a top five pick two or three years ago, who'd basically not amounted to anything under Sacramento. But based on a small sample size of one game, now suddenly is getting a bit of daylight to spread his leaves, and I could. I mean, they're half a game behind Denver in the Denver for the eight seed.
Well, the thing that the thing that I couldn't understand with the Boogie trade, right? Everyone's ripping Sacramento for trading Boogie. You know, you don't trade a player that good. You never trade a superstar.
Should we just outline for the for our audience who don't give a fuck about basketball to the same extent?
Why are you listening?
Do?
Why? Why are you listening then?
Because we're funny.
Oh, right.
Because we're That's entertaining.
Sure, keep, go ahead. Keep going.
Because I'm funny. And I try and work bring you through these issues. So, Boogie Cousins, who's this massively talented center, which is a position that's not fashionable in the NBA anymore, but he's like an old, like a massively talented big man, but he can also shoot threes. Prodigious talent, but very emotional and a massive sook and chucks his toys out the pram a lot. And he got drafted to a terrible franchise in Sacramento in that it's been run by morons. And he's had a different head coach every year, and it's a fucking disaster. So we're never quite sure whether Sacramento are fucked because Boogie's a knob, or Boogie's fucked because Sacramento is run by knobs, or somewhere in between. And there was a really good and long and interesting piece by Kevin Arnovitz of ESPN that dug into that and never really got to the answer because the answer is kind of both. But in the end, the ownership of Sacramento finally chucked its toys and said, right, we're trading him. And they basically, it seems that they traded him for the first decent offer they got, and decent is in inverted commas there. It's probable they could have got something better if they'd been a bit more patient, but the owner appears to be a fairly capricious sort of dude, which is a very polite way to put it. So they traded him for a rookie who was a rookie shooting guard who the owner has had a crush on for ages since he missed him in the draft. Some other bits and pieces and some picks. So like, that's really good.
The logic.
He went to New Orleans to be alongside Anthony Davis. And that for the past week, people have been going, this is going to be tremendous. The Pelicans are going to be fucking awesome. It's brilliant. And the Pelicans went out and got their asses kicked by the aforementioned Rockets, who'd signed Lou Williams and are now just shooting like... Yeah. Jet Li and Chow Hyun Fat in a fucking Hong Kong action movie from the 90s.
Yeah, probably not the side you want to go up against with with two lumbering big guys running up and down the court. But
no,
anyway.
Not at all. And the Pelicans don't have a great run into the finals,
no.
To the playoffs. They've got a lot more of this sort of shit in their future.
The thing with Boogie that I don't understand, right, is everyone's like, oh, you can't trade him. He's such an awesome player. Well, they've never made the finals while he's been there. So if they don't make the finals after they trade him, what's changed? Other than everyone at Sacramento's goes to work a little bit happier that they don't have to put up with this massively entitled sook. I don't see the downside. The real downside would be is if... All of a sudden,
the downside is if some moron did the trade and got you back very little on the dollar for it, because they could have got much, much more.
You reckon they could have?
Oh fuck yes.
I don't know about that.
Absolutely, they could have.
Like they could have got much more a year ago.
You're a coach, so you buy in all of that sort of coach nonsense. The dude is prodigiously talented, ridiculously offensively talented.
But everyone else that's been prodigiously talented by the metrics in the NBA has made a final series, and he never has.
Yeah, just like Kevin Love with Minnesota.
Yeah, okay, that's probably a good analogy. But he's
I mean,
if
you're surrounded by genuine rubbish and your GM is a complete moron, which was the case with those Minnesota teams with Kevin Love, you're not going to... You can't do it by yourself, particularly at that position. I mean, Kevin Love was a four. Mm. Boogie's kind of a 4.5, 5. You're just not going to be able to do it by yourself.
Yeah.
Who's going to pass you the ball?
I still...
You'll be standing there in the post looking like you might as well pull up a deck chair. No one's going to get you the pill.
I don't know whether they would have actually gotten heaps more.
I think they could have got more. And maybe if it wasn't for the owner's peculiar hard-on for Buddy Hield, it probably could have turned out. The thing is that we were talking about this the other week, whether, you know, if Boogie left, it would be kind of a moratorium on whether Boogie was the problem or Sacramento were the problem. Going to New Orleans, because New Orleans isn't that well run either. It's probably, you know, it's not as badly run as Sacramento, but as we've said before, it's run by the NFL team that is in that town. The ownership is the same between the Saints and the Pelicans, and a lot of NFL people who don't know basketball are in that front office.
They're slightly different sports, shall we put it that way?
Yes, and they're completely different sports, and they're completely different. The biggest problem is their conditioning people are the same, and the conditioning you need to be a 290-pound offensive lineman is a little bit different from the conditioning you need to be a wing on a basketball team who plays 82 games.
Mm. Well,
that's a little bit different.
That's the other thing with Cousins. I was watching a bit some highlights of that game before we came
on. To be fair, Cousins looked like he could probably, LeBron. It looks like he could play offensive line.
But he does not look fit, man. There's not many players left in the NBA that don't look fit. You know, the days of Shaq coming back, 20 kilos overweight and working his way into the season, those days are pretty much gone. All those guys are pretty fit, and he does not look fit.
I don't know. I didn't see that in the... Admittedly, it was the promotional photos with he was standing next to Anthony Davis, and they both kind of look...
Yeah, they're big guys, but he just, when he's running up and down the court, he just looks... just doesn't look like he's fit. He looks like he's struggling a little bit. I don't know.
I just think it's because of this. I mean, he's a big dude.
Mm.
And we get used to... the problem is LeBron spoiled us for dude that size. Whereas LeBron is like a fucking... some kind of robot.
Mm.
Some kind of T1 million.
He probably... he probably trains... And by train, I mean stretches, gets massages, does yoga, lifts weights, everything. Probably the only guy that's ever worked as hard on his body in the NBA would be KG, I reckon. I don't reckon anyone works as hard on it as he does.
KG worked on his sledging first and then his body.
Yeah, well, KG probably worked out in front of a full-length mirror and sledged himself the whole time while he was working out. So. Yep.
Speaking of sledging, did you catch the Draymond Green sledging Paul Pierce?
I did. That was very nice.
You're out here for that farewell tour. They don't love you like that. It's The key point is that in 2028, when Dre's on his farewell tour, there will be nobody.
No, but I think the thing is that makes that funny is that Draymond knows that. He absolutely knows.
I don't think he does.
You reckon?
No. I don't think he... No, he thinks he's on a par with these people. And one day, it's going to have to be explained to him that... I could see him being I could see him being one of the first out the door when the salary cap bites. Because he's going to think,
I don't agree.
He's going to N'Golo Kante this to bring it to the other big story of the day. He's going to be the guy who gets the big money offer, gets his head turned, and he's the guy who fucks off. And the club will think, we didn't need that fucker anyway. And then they'll probably find that they kind of did after all. Did when N'Golo Kante fucked off.
I think you're wrong on both counts there. He already took less money last time, considerably less money last time than he could have. And I think Golden State absolutely understand what he's worth. I would be very surprised to see him go, but, when it's $20 or $30 million a year...
When did he sign that offer?
Same year Klay Thompson did.
That's a while ago, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, but I'm not saying that he took less money, compared to now, but he took less than the max.
Keep in mind the development of Draymond as a
concept
rather than Draymond the person and the player.
His
ego must be the size of a fucking Zeppelin by now.
No, I'm pretty sure it was after they won the championship. He signed after they won the championship, so his ego would have been pretty damn big at the end of that run.
That'll be two years by the end of this by June, which is a lifetime in this game.
I'm saying his ego would have been healthily developed by then. I don't think he would have been.
He kind of arrived as a personality, as a force in that parade. That was kind of the point at which everyone sort of thought, oh, okay, we might have something more than what we thought. He's more than just a player. He's
Breaking. Hang on, I'm going to cut in with breaking news because Paul Pierce has just tweeted.
Is he taking a photo of an emoji?
No. 73 wins, and you thought you were going to win that title that year. Crying face three times. 3-1 lead. Oops. That's the thing.
Old man. Oh, that's where you go.
That's what you got to do, don't you? Like, you don't.
And Paul Pierce. I mean, get the fuck off Paul Pierce's case. I mean, that gentleman deserves more. Put some fucking respect on his name, which was pretty much the sentiment of every tweet I saw on the subject. Because I was off doing something. I think I was probably trying to find beer in the fridge. So I missed the actual event, and I had to look it up. And it was like a lot of people saying, you know, with what he said, is like, you know, fuck off, Draymond. You know, basically, come back when you've gone through puberty in NBA terms was the general sentiment, which is not surprising because Pierce is.
But I think that's the way Draymond is. Draymond always has to feel like he's at that
stage of his career.
Yeah, like Draymond's one of those guys that has always got to feel like he's punching up. Do you know what I mean? He's not the LeBron, Durant, Curry superstar. He's the guy that has to feel like he's battling.
That's a good point. How do you think Draymond's going to go when he finally realizes that he is, if he ever is of the elite, and he finally realizes that he is of the elite, is that going to take away his hunger? Because as you've said,
the fact that he was
a second round pick and he's got this chip on, you know, he's very balanced. He's got a chip on both shoulders. Factors massively into the way. Excuse me, he plays the game.
But I think there'll be a certain section of the NBA media and fandom that will never ever put him in that category. But there'll be another subsection of coaches and front offices and those guys that absolutely think that he's a superstar, but just not in the traditional sense. Like every single,
a little bit like KG, yeah.
Yeah, every single club would kill for a KG, would kill for a Draymond Green. Like that, yeah. You need that guy in your club.
He's going to have to keep looking for reasons to get upset. He's going to have to keep looking for people to get angry at. It's going to be harder for him to motivate himself based on perceived slights, which is why he keeps trying to agitate to create these things.
Yeah.
It's a method of motivation that has a half-life. It's not, you can't keep doing it forever. I mean, LeBron does it a little bit, where he, not to the same extent, because LeBron's not the same sort of guy, but every so often you see LeBron almost create drama where there isn't any, just because he, as a motivational tool, which could be tiresome, absolutely.
But I actually think that he'll evolve. I think that, I can remember watching an Elite Eight games where this team had like a sort of
Bezos coaching corner.
Yeah, Bezos. The team,
AKA, had a time to go for a beer.
Had a definite superstar, and that superstar went down injured, and there was sort of like two sort of Clay Thompson type players, you know, guys that were seen as superstars but didn't have that that big attitude.
Guys with really fucked facial hair.
Well, that's most of the Warriors. Didn't have that big attitude, and they sort of just kept playing their roles, and it was the Draymond Green of the team, the guy that did have that chip on his shoulder, was the one that stepped up and tried to pull them through the rest of the game without the superstar. And that's why I think I think fans undervalue players like that, but I don't think teams do.
I don't think fans of the club that are playing, you know, I don't think Warriors fans undervalue it. I think general, you know, cash.
It's not very liked, but then KG was never liked. Now,
Roy Keane was hated. I mean, when I see Draymond Green, I think Roy Keane from Manchester United. I think Reno Gattuso of Milan. I think those sorts of dudes. The fucking Axemen of midfield. That's Draymond's equivalent in footballing terms, and they were generally despised by the fans of every other club and beloved by fans of the club. So that's really Well, that's the nicest compliment I've ever paid Draymond, is that he's Reno Gattuso.
Speaking of football, do you think Leicester would like a Draymond Green type character? Reno Gattuso?
They'd like a bullet, I think. So, this is sad. It's the end of the road for the Leicester fairy tale because Ranieri got fired this morning. Ironically, on the back of probably one of their best recent performances, which was losing at Sevilla in the Champions League, but getting an away goal, which is really important in these two-legged European ties. Because they lost 2-1 to Sevilla, they got a late goal, which means that they only have to win, if they win 1-0 at home in the return leg in 2 weeks, they're through. But apparently,
which is always reason to fire your coach.
Well, they had gone out of the FA Cup the week before, and they haven't won a Premier League game all year, which is a problem because we're almost up to March. Ranieri had clearly lost the dressing room, and it was clear by his increasingly desperate public statements that they just weren't listening to him anymore.
Is it the biggest Premiership hangover ever?
It's been done before. That's the thing. I mean, nothing is unprecedented in football. Football's been going for long enough. The shame is that it's really about. It's not that he lost the dressing room. It's the dressing room left him, if you like. And the problems. I mean, the problems with Leicester's Premiership defense. I mean, someone tweeted earlier this morning, how could it have all gone so wrong? And I was like, I can tell you, but it's not going to fit in 140 characters. And yep. I was actually trying to work out exactly how to put it. But the most concise way you can put it is that squad were a high-variance squad who were all playing in the form of their life, playing a very particular tactical setup that Ranieri had developed, which was based on soaking up a lot of pressure, conceding a lot of possession, and hitting very hard on the counter-attack. It depended a lot on turning the ball over in midfield, and having lightning-fast counter-attacks that relied on Mahrez's passing and the massively in-form goal-scoring of Jamie Vardy. And his ridiculous pace, because he is ridiculously quick. All those turnovers depended on a lot of those turnovers depended on a fellow called N'Golo Kante, who was the holding midfielder. He got the big money move over the summer and went to Chelsea. So he went. They also lost Steve Walsh. No, not the rugby referee with a massively entitled opinion of himself. This is Leicester's, what they call their chief scout. But in effect, really, he was, in a basketball sense, he was the head of player evaluation. He was the guy who'd picked guys like N'Golo Kante and Jamie Vardy out of non-league football and Riyad Mahrez out of nowhere and he'd picked all these dudes from nowhere who'd gone on to have this fantastic form in 15-16. He got poached to Everton. They proceeded to go on and make some what have turned out to be fairly appalling signings for the 16-17 season. All the dudes they've signed have turned out to be
duds.
No fucking good. Well, they don't fit the kind of football that Ranieri wants to play.
We talked about that when they won and saying, you know, what would having more money and more games do to them? And like you said, if they'd been the San Antonio Spurs of the Premier League and kept their RC Buford, because that's essentially what he does for the Spurs, then maybe they come through this a little bit.
And now he's doing a really good job for Everton. It needs to be added. He's now the director of football for Everton, and Everton have started to get better as the season's gone along. On the other side of the break, so.
I was just going to say, if I can go back to my little coaching thing again. I've always had this theory that if you're not one of the big guns, right? If you don't have all the talent in the league, if you can't just go and say, "Oh, we need a gun midfielder who can, you know, run the 100 meters in 11 seconds." And, you know, you just go out and buy one. If you don't have that sort of ability to be able to put a team together like that, then what you have to do is you have to do something different tactically than everyone else. But the problem with that is it has a shelf life. And in my sport, it has a longer shelf life because, you know, there's no scouts, there's no coaching panel, there's no, you know, people watching.
There's not a lot of video.
Well, there is video, but there's no one really breaking it down. Like, you know, my head coach at Elite Eight.
There's not Optadata. There's no Optadata saying this is every pass that happened in that game, and this is every ball possession, and this was every decision that was made, and this is where the defenders were. That stuff doesn't exist for the code that you play.
But it eventually filters through, you know, like every trend filters through and gets rebuffed or changed. But if you do have that underdog sort of team, you absolutely can go into a tournament or a league and sort of get the jump by doing something very different. But it's very, very hard to maintain for a long period of time unless you keep evolving, you know, you keep trying to go. And I think that's what San Antonio's done a little bit, where they've sort of tried to not stay the same for too long. Like, you know, they keep changing the way that they play.
That's exactly what happened to Leicester, because Leicester were playing that very particular style, that very sort of soaking up pressure, hitting on the counter with a very fast counter, all depending on a lot of turnovers in the depth of midfield. That style of play, people started figuring out ways to play against it towards the end of last year, but this year, everyone had seen it a few times and had figured out ways to play against it. So it was it's informative that the games that where Leicester have looked the best has been against people, against teams or against coaches that haven't seen that before. They duffed up Man City 4-2, playing the way they always play, because Pep Guardiola had never seen that shit before. They played really well in the Champions League because Europe hadn't necessarily seen the way they'd played before. But by and large, the Premier League teams that had been around before knew what to do with that. And then, of course, you've got the added ability that you've got a bunch of basically pissant journeymen who played in the form of their lives, but had been taken to the to the heights by this one dude, believing their own press and getting fat and lazy and complacent and smug and just not having the hunger anymore, as well as pay equity in that club room.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of rifts in that club room because some people had got paid, like Vardy, and some people hadn't because their contracts weren't up.
Yep.
So Ranieri lost the sheds, and that was the end of it. I kind of hope they go down, not because I'm bitter because they signed Ranieri, although he's a lovely dude, but also because all fairy tales have to end somewhere, don't they? And if you make it as a hard death, like bang, it actually becomes more of a mythology to it.
Then they
kind of peter out. Like Blackburn hung around for about 4 years. Like when Blackburn won in 94, 95, they went kind of 6th, 13th, midfield, out the league.
Yeah. It'd make a great movie, I have to say.
There's a Jamie Vardy biopic in the works. I don't know if there's a Leicester biopic.
There's a Delhi biopic in the works, mate. That doesn't mean much at all.
Delhi Alley or Delavadova?
Delavadova.
I think I'd rather watch the Delhi Alley one. Look, as the Seppos say, the Seppo baseball guys, flags fly forever. Mm. There's some argument that, you know, that that being relegated is worse than is more bad than winning a title is good. Bullshit. Everyone remembers who won the fucking title.
That's...
Relegation is only temporary. You'll always come back at some stage. Every club gets relegated. We will live to see Man United and Chelsea and Man City and all these clubs. We'll live to see them get relegated.
That's what I don't understand about the Durant thing is everyone's like, oh, if they win a championship this year, it'll have an asterisk next to it and it'll be tainted forever. And I'm like, you guys have a really...
Oh, what? Who's saying this?
I have seen journalists on Twitter say this.
Straw man, name them. I've never heard such bullshit in my life.
I follow on Twitter, but I think it's one of the Phoenix...
You should stop following them because they're fucking morons.
I think it's one of the Phoenix beat writers, to be honest.
Ben,
And it's like we've got an example of this only like 5 years ago.
Tell me more about the opinions of the beat writer for the 18-39 Phoenix Suns. Yeah.
Well, they're probably just bitter and twisted from having followed Phoenix.
Actually, that's a sneaky problem because this, I mean Sacramento. I mean, were the big message from their message the big message from the pundits to Sacramento was that they need to tank like hell so that they retain their pick. The problem is that the bottom of the West is a long way down.
Mm.
And the bottom of the East is a long way down when you're 25-33. I mean, it's you've got to drop a lot of games to get down to a crappy record.
Yep.
So it's actually, I don't mind this, you know, if they're going to make a sustained attempt at the eight, I kind of like it. I like the, I like the balls on the coach.
I like the Cody factor. Hilarious if Sacramento made the finals. Like it
and
just
New Orleans
would.
Didn't.
Well, New Orleans might not make because that one of their but they don't have much outside shooting and one of their best outside shooters broke his hand today. So
No, it wasn't one of their best outside shooters, it was the dude they picked up from Sacramento in the trade. It was Omri Caspi.
Yeah, but he's still like one of their outside shooters. They traded some of their other outside shooters.
He was the best who'd played for them for half a game.
Mm. Yeah, I know Denver shit the bed, but I think Denver are going to get that 8 seed.
I don't know. I think the Miles Plumlee thing will Mason. They got Mace out of Mace has been secretly kind of crap for Portland. So
which is a shame
because
he had a good final series for them.
And he was the only good Plumlee. He might still be Portland because they're in the middle of it, and they're.
I think they've got a pretty easy run home too, don't they?
And the Bosnian Bear was really good for them today, so we'll see how that turns out. So as we spoke about last week, the Bosnian Bear was part of that trade with Plumlee. Anyway, trade's boring. Basketball's more interesting. Sport is really interesting. I think we've said all we need to say about Leicester, other than good night. Thanks for coming. Thanks for all the thanks. It's been swell, but the swelling's gone down. The football that's being played in the last week was primarily FA Cup and European games. The EPL starts up again this weekend, and there was a lot of press about Arsenal playing fifth tier Sutton United. So this is a team that's below the Football League. It's in the first tier below the what used to be the old Division 4, the League 2, they call it now. A kind of semi-professional team, middle of nowhere. You know, Magic of the Cup, all that kind of bullshit. And The Sun, Rupert Murdoch's worst tabloid, really traded in on this because with Arsenal drawing the Sutton United side, The Sun moved in and started just generating fucking hashtag content. Their betting company sponsored their shirts, so The Sun Bets was written all over their thing, and they made a minor celebrity out of this out of the reserve goalkeeper, who's this 47-year-old 19-stone man.
Is this the guy that was eating a pie on the bench?
We're getting to that. Wayne Shaw, roly-poly goalie.
I saw this random picture of this dude, and I'm like, "Hang, is this the Premiership? What the hell's going on?"
No,
here?
So it's the FA Cup. So it's Premier League versus National League, which is like the fifth tier. So Wayne Shaw's eating a pie on the bench after he's basically found a way to be in every photo opportunity for the week leading up to the game, showing how salt of the earth they all are and how all that sort of stuff. So The Sun had orchestrated a lot of these media opportunities and these photo ops. They'd also, through their betting arm, they'd been running various markets on the game, including 8-1 if Wayne Shaw ate a pie during the game.
Nah.
On camera. And then Wayne Shaw happened, inverted commas, to eat a pie during the game.
Well, that's not as fun.
Nah, it's not, is it?
No.
When it's spot fixing, it's not as much fun. So he's been fired. and is having a Football Association investigation into him because that's Muhammad Amir shit, really.
Yeah.
And it's dumb. It's dumb Muhammad Amir shit, but it's Muhammad Amir shit.
It's, yeah, it's going to be found out pretty
quickly. It's no different to bowling a bunch of fucking no balls on cue, isn't it? Mm. I mean, some people argued, well, if you'd known about the bet, to not eat a pie would have been spot fixing too. And I'm like, yeah, how often do you see a goalkeeper eat a pie on television?
Well, unless he eats a pie at the 37th minute of the first half every single game for good luck or something.
Yeah, that's for people who know the form guide.
Yeah.
If you're going to open the pages of the form guide to go, yeah, Wayne Shaw, yeah, ate a pie in his last start. Mr. Dropped the pie in his second start. Of course, fat goalkeepers forever have been copping who ate all the pies.
Mm. So why not just eat all the pies?
It's sort of, exactly. We found who ate all the pies. He ate all the pies. I don't have a lot of sympathy for him. I mean, he's lost his job with a... The thing is that the main reason I don't is that he's 47 years old. He's been in football for 30 years. He was actually a goalkeeper at South. He's been in plenty of professional clubs. He was the keeper at Southampton. He was on the books at Southampton when Alan Shearer, the former England striker, was coming up. So Shearer went from Southampton to Blackburn Rovers to Newcastle. So that's how long ago that is. That's like the very early 90s. But he's been around professional football long enough to know, don't spot fix. That's not good. So don't do that. The problem is that all this involved the villains of the piece who'll never get called on it are the Sun.
Yeah.
And the Sun are the worst cunts in all of Britain. I mean, the Sun, you may know the backstory to this, you may not, but so it was interesting. A couple of weeks ago, we didn't talk about this, but Liverpool's ownership, who are actually a bunch of dudes from Boston, but they were approached by the families who were from Hillsborough. You may know that in Hillsborough there was a basically a massive what's the word for it? I guess disaster is the only word for it. But 96 fans were crushed to death in this massive disaster at FA Cup game, and the Sun reported a whole lot of bullshit that had been made up by the cops, who were complacent and probably to blame for a lot of the conditions that led to those deaths, that Liverpool fans were looting the dead and stealing wallets and were to blame for it. And it was printed on the front page of the Sun under the headline, "The Truth." If you ever see the words "The Truth" next to a fellow by the name of Kelvin McKenzie, who's still a columnist at the Sun. He was the editor of the Sun in those days. So basically the Sun just smeared these dead football Liverpool fans. So this is one of the reasons why you'll never see a copy of the Sun being sold in Liverpool. But Liverpool have, what are we now? Not 2017, 1989. That's quite a few years. But Liverpool have pulled all the credentials of all the Sun's football writers. And they're not allowed to report on Liverpool games from inside the press box. It's only taken, what's that, 28 years?
Oh, they've done it this year.
Yeah, they did it this year. they got a pro. Because it was only recently that the campaign called Justice for the 96, it all went to court, and obviously the Sun, you know, the police were trying to defend themselves and claim that they weren't doing the wrong thing, but the former head of the Met Police in Liverpool was, you know, thoroughly rogered by the... It was basically shown that the cops had, you know, not only fucked up massively in the Hillsborough in their conduct on the day, but all the stories that had been spread about the conduct of Liverpool fans were, you know, 99.9% fictional. And it's just this open wound in English football ever since then. Because, of course, English football in the 80s was a massive mess. It was a lot of crowd violence, horrible overcrowding. There'd been, you know, fires, places like Bradford that had killed people. It was like third world. This is kind of the dark ages before the Premier League, when it all became all-seater stadia and plenty of money and prawn sandwiches and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, man. The media like that just gives me the shits. So.
Yep. But they'll never get called on. I mean, they fucked Wayne Shaw. He kind of fucked himself, man.
There was one little interesting thing that
Renshaw's out, so he can go for a shit now. That's good.
Yeah, and Marsh has got a couple of runs, which is very disappointing. What is it with? I'm starting to see a bit of a turn of Australian cricket fans about absolute dead pitches. You know, we've been banging on for ages about, you know, dead pitches in Australia, and they should fuck them right off. But it's interesting that the failure of our middle order in this game is basically being put down to, well, we never fucking have the patience to bat for a long time in Australia on roads. We just want to smash it all over the place. How would you expect us to have any patience on a pitch that actually turns? I just find it a bit refreshing to start to see like the narrative turn a little bit. There's been a lot less, oh, it's, you know, India have stitched us up with a terrible turning pitch.
Yeah, but I wouldn't conclude anything from this pitch, because this is like a day seven pitch on day one. This was, and it is rather beautiful to see them obviously try something completely dodgy, and it has blown up in their face. As Hamlet said, 'tis the sport to see the engineer foist on his own petard. There is nothing funnier than seeing, well, like, you know,
pitches aren't
just blow up in their fucking face, you cheating fucking pricks.
I don't think so, because like, and pitches aren't unexact science. Like, you know, you've had
gabba
pitches.
Are you going to blame climate change, Captain NASA?
I am going to blame climate change, actually, because we've had gabba.
Well, what's the regular rainfall in Poon?
No, I don't think it's the rainfall. It's been there.
Wet in Poon?
No, it's been hot and dry. The hottest and driest February they've had in X amount of years.
I thought Poon was hot and wet.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think they expected it to be hot and wet, and it's been hot and dry, and it's dried the pitch out a lot more than the curator expected. I think the curator's even come out and said
a bit of a tag in his mouth.
I think the curator's actually come out and said that the pitch is sort of 3 days older than what he would have liked it to have been.
The curator is getting fired at the end of this test match.
You reckon?
Yes.
I don't agree.
Fucking sure. Because particularly when India lose by a lot, because they're going to lose by a lot, because they can't. They're not going to. They're currently 300 behind. They're not getting 300 on that deck. They're just not.
Oh yeah, they might lose, but I think everyone's India under Kohli is not the India of old.
Everyone gets fired for everything.
Okay.
There was a brilliant tweet that someone pointed out that the coach of the Premier League winners, the coach of the FA Cup winners, the coach of the team that finished second in the FA Cup, the coach of the team that won the promotion playoff, had all been fired. None of them have got their jobs anymore.
Yes, and I did like
gets
the
fired for everything.
I did like the punchline of that joke, which is Arsene Wenger is just a smart guy. Yeah.
Because
it's like
never win.
Never get fired.
Yes. And fair enough too. We need to talk about some unpleasantness that happened at the domestic football. In the Sydney Derby last week, where Sydney were playing Western Sydney, and the red and black the red and black block had a poster, had a big sign of Graham Harlan, the coach of Sydney FC, and a cock and balls, which they thrust into the picture of Graham Arnold's face, because. That's what you do
Why?
When you're grown men who like to dance around with their shirts off. You make ridiculously immature and homophobic tifos. I don't know why they thought this was a good idea. So, anyway, FFA charged the club. They had to show cause, and the club said, "This is, you know, this is awful. This is horrendous." Like everybody in football said, "This is awful and this is horrendous. We need to not do this." The only people who didn't say this is awful and this is horrendous were the Red and Black Bloc, who came out and said, "It's basically doubled down on it, saying they were going to make merch of the cartoon of Graham Arnold sucking dick, and complaining that the FFA weren't as fast." Were much faster in issuing a breach notice to the club than they were hearing their appeals for having some of their miscreant dudes thrown out the fucking ground. Basically just a bunch of the worst fuckwits you could imagine supporting your sport.
It's just amazing that
they can go and fuck themselves.
It's just amazing that people get upset when you call them for being dickheads. It's like, well, you're a dickhead. Well, what do you expect to be called? You look, I've got the proof. Here's the proof on the television. You're a dickhead. So just fuck off out of the sport.
Active support of most clubs are inclusive. I mean, I've counted the number of times I've seen the active support of football clubs with big TIFOs being the big banners and shit, that are very inclusive and saying, you know, refugees welcome or making progressive political statements. And these guys have made one that has the opposition coach sucking a dick because apparently they're two.
Just,
well, maybe not two, 12. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what you do about that. I think the only sensible thing to do is to shut down the active support for a game or two like they did to Dortmund, because Dortmund's fans got a bit rowdy, as we said a few weeks ago, with RB Leipzig, the team that's owned by Red Bull. They took their objection to plastic football a little bit too hard by throwing things that weren't plastic at the opposition fans. And as a result, their active support was closed down.
Mm.
So it was interesting watching the Bundesliga highlights from last week. The yellow wall, which is like where all their active support sits, you know, with the fans and all the banners and flags and shit, was just this empty terrace. Didn't affect them. Yeah. They won 3-0, but you can do that in Dortmund because it's not like the active support can find somewhere else to sit because all the other seats are sold out. Whereas if you shut the active support,
they'll just buy tickets somewhere else.
Nobody goes to fucking, apart from the RBB, nobody goes to Western Sydney games at Spotless Stadium. It's an absolute fucking library. So that hasn't worked out very well at all.
Well, any other hotspot takes, Doc?
Look, I just want to reinforce the fact that I'm incredibly proud that I came up with the idea that Matt Renshaw is an anagram of wet shart man, because that's basically what he's been doing for about 2.5 days so far.
Quality content. I think it's all a hoax just to get Glenn Maxwell on the field to field.
That could be true. Yeah, a bit of streakage.
Our fielding isn't the best. Maybe Darren Lehman's fucking feeding him the wrong tablets.
Yeah, maybe he's just taking it to Taco Bell. I hesitate to dig into this because it is a bit of a downer, but I think we need to pour a little bit out for Dan Vickerman, former Wallabies lock, big South African who made his home in Australia and made his nation in Australia. Was killed by no suspicious circumstances.
There's got to be questions of CTE there, doesn't there? Like,
I don't know. I don't know about that. I don't know anything about that. All I know is that no suspicious circumstances is the leading cause of death in Australia, age 15 to 44, and that's partly because of the fact that we have to call it no suspicious circumstances, and there's a fucking taboo about people offing themselves. And if we actually had a fucking sensible adult conversation about it, maybe people could have issues dealt with in a more productive way that didn't result in, you know, leaving wives and kids without a dad.
That's the bit that actually is just
that's the thing
that shattering,
really fucking
isn't it?
Pisses me off. Yeah,
is it? The pain's ended for him, but not for his family. So,
well, the problem also is that there's sort of a press council policy that the way they report suicide is that they, you know, they have little code terms like, they never say what it is, and they say there were no suspicious circumstances or was found dead at home or things like that. Mm. And they run the lifeline number at the bottom more often than not. There's no, well, no one's saying no, but there isn't conclusive, decent evidence that reporting on suicide in a by calling it suicide actually leads to suicide ideation in the audience. That's the thing. The argument was always, we can't call it that because then people will ideate it, will say, oh, that looks like a good idea, I'll go and do that.
Mm.
There's nothing, there's no actual clinical data to back that up, and that's really the annoying thing about it. And in fact,
I think that was more...
It's impossible to do that research because of the way the world works, but where they've done research around the fringes of it, it seems that the indication is that it goes the other way.
It's pretty hard to do a control group for that. I think that sort of came about when you had, you know, the Kurt Cobain type suicides, and it was, yeah, I could see how they would get worried about copycat.
See, we need to announce the lifeline number right now because we might trigger somebody, so we need to be careful. But
All jokes aside, if you are fucking feeling that way, go and get help from someone. There are people out there that will help you. Go and get help.
There will be people who care.
Yeah.
There will be people who care.
And help does actually help because, you know, both of us have known people that have had depression, and help, whether it's, you know, talking to someone or chemical, definitely helps.
Yeah.
So.
Oh fuck! I am that person. I've been through bleak space. I've all that sort of stuff. And there's a better way. But that's also why I kind of feel like we might be killing more people by shoving it under the rug and doing the no suspicious circumstances thing. So that's kind of really what I wanted to bring up. But the point you make about CTE is entirely fair enough. He would have taken a lot of head knocks.
Well, particularly the way he played, he was a very into the fray sort of player. Do you know what I mean?
Well, we have to say that we haven't seen any evidence that we haven't seen any. Nothing has come out to say that that was an issue, that he was suffering from chronic traumatic encephalopathy or any of that kind of concussive trauma.
Well, and so, they probably didn't keep concussion statistics back then either, to be honest. You know, in those days, it would have been, you know, slap on the bum, you're right, mate, yep, back out onto the field.
And he went on to play quite a few years for Cambridge in club rugby and college rugby in Britain. I mean, they certainly would have been keeping track of it there. So, and we know concussion is, I mean, this is entirely reckless speculation and supposition on our part, but it is something that will become a thing in rugby for sure. And
well,
rugby league, but
in all those big front on contact sports. Well, not even on the front on ones, like even AFL. Like, and that's one of the things I've always liked
soccer,
about
hitting wet balls, particularly in the 60s and 70s, hitting the big wet leather balls
has been correlated. Like, you're not allowed to head a ball until you get to like under 15s or something, aren't you? In soccer, is that?
Well, the balls now are made of you know
very light materials,
helium filled polystyrene. So that's all fine, but
that's one of the things
I don't want to leave on that.
about AFL is I actually really like their head contact
women's
rule,
competition because the girls are pretty.
The Brisbane Lions girls are actually doing quite well. Is that it's there's no
in intent. My pants.
There's no intent to the rule. Like, it's not up to, you know, the umpire to judge intent. It's just like, if you go above the shoulders, it's a penalty or it's a free kick. You know,
it doesn't matter whether it was accident or not.
Yep, because it actually does disincentivize teams to, you know, stay away from the thing you're supposed to stay away from.
Yes, which is watching Brisbane Lions games because they're awful. Although, if you're saying that they've actually, when the women's team are better than the men's team, then
well, the women's team aren't cursed. The men's team's cursed and will be
don't
cursed.
Don't they have that girl who can like kick the ball and you know,
she,
kiss
she's
her own ankle?
She's an next touch player. Australian touch player. She used to play for Australia.
Well, this is actually something I worry about a little bit with. And I know I'm the... so far in the last 6 weeks, whenever we talked about AFL women, I've been the one who's saying, yeah, but yeah. And I know that makes me sound like an old misogyny, but I hate AFL and I hate seeing it having any good press. But one thing I worry about is the fact that they are just clearing out a lot of other sports to get their athletes. And it's, I mean, how is Australia gonna sit with the idea of, okay, you've got a fantastic AFL women's competition, but all of a sudden, the Opals aren't very good at basketball anymore. New Zealand are beating us in netball. Mm. Track and field has gone to shit. You know, we start losing.
I think
this going to matter? Because this is a definite output. This is going to happen. The best athletes are going to go where the money is, it fucking should.
That's why I think netball will be fine, because they've almost got like a fully professional competition. So... and there's an actual pathway
How's the pay scale compared to AFL?
More. I should ask. I've got a friend who's way into it, but I think 50% of their teams basically can have it as a job. You know, their top half of their players can have it as a full time job.
I read something that said that they were actually earning fuck all, and it was a lot of.
That was the old comp, and that's why.
In the W League, they're earning fuck all. That's for certain.
I think that's why they pulled. That's why Netball Australia pulled their horns in and went back to a purely Australian comp, because with that Trans Tasman comp and the costs, they were sinking costs into travel and negotiating rights across the ditch. Whereas they sort of went, well, if we go the Big Bash way and basically import all the best players into our Australian league and cut down on the travel and have a bit more control, well, we can pay players a lot more. So
yeah, there's definitely an overhead issue there.
I'll follow up on that for next week though and find out, considering I said that Lang Park was sold out for the Super 10s and was completely wrong. I probably should check my facts every now and again.
Why? Anybody tuning in for facts is
sadly, sadly mistaken.
Needs to get their maps sussed.
Mm.
Anything else you want to say?
Nah, I'm done. Let's go and talk some tunes.
Stick a fork in you.
Mm.
I still haven't used my joke about Gabriel Jesus, but that's 2 weeks now.
Mm.
Gabriel Jesus is the reason that Man City have been any good for about the last 5 weeks, but he got injured, metatarsal injury, so. His foot's buggered. So he's going to be out for about 6 weeks. So Jesus will be back around Easter.
Very good. Good night, Doc.
Fuck.